Have you finished your personal statement yet? Now's the perfect time to get it professionally reviewed by a medical school HQ expert advisor. We have former directors of admissions, admissions officers, and the like on our small team of amazing people. They have the inside knowledge from reading thousands and thousands and thousands, tens, if not 100,000 personal statements going through the process and setting up the process for their whole committee. They know exactly what medical schools look for and the common red flags that can get your entire application thrown out. Take advantage of our flash sale right now, going through May 6th, up to 6,000 characters reviewed for just $150. That's a $75 discount on our regular price. Go to editmyps.com. Again, that's editmyps.com. The pre-med year, session number 566. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome to The Pre-Med Years. Thank you so much for joining me today. I have a great guest today. In a world where tradition often clashes with ambition, Tabitha stands out as a testament to the power of resilience and the critical role of mentorship. From navigating the complexities of being a pre-med, the daunting hurdles of the MCAT, her story is not just her own. It's a shared narrative of countless underrepresented students striving to shape the future of healthcare. Before we jump into Tabitha's story, I want to talk about the MCAT Minutes brought to you by Blueprint MCAT. Did you know they have an amazing free account? Go over to blueprintmcat.com, register for their free account, and get access to a free full-length exam, a free half-length diagnostic, free flashcard platform, and an amazing free study planner tool. Again, that's blueprintmcat.com. Let's go in and join me right now as we explore Tabitha's story through the challenges of her med school prep, application, reapplication, and more. Tabitha, welcome to the pre-med years. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
When did you first realize you wanted to be a doctor?
So I grew up in a very traditional Hispanic household, and at a young age, we were taught the importance of familismo, which is basically the need for family loyalty and caring for others. So when I was younger, I used to serve as my family's interpreter, and I often went to doctor's appointments with my family members, and I had to be the interpreter. And I just thought it was very interesting to see how physicians have the knowledge to be able to diagnose and treat patients. So in middle school, it came time to apply to high school, and I wanted to apply to the vocational high school, and I chose the medical program. And in high school is where I realized that I want to be a doctor. So I was able to get my certified nursing assistant, and I got patient experience through that and as an EMT as well. Mm-hmm. And my passion for medicine grew since then.
Yeah. As a Latina woman going through this process, being a pre-med student, there are oftentimes I hear a lot from, whether it's Black, Hispanic, Latina, you name it, people who don't see physicians who look like themselves, who are from places like themselves, and therefore are discouraged or don't think they can do that thing. Did you ever have any of those self-doubts or thoughts about this process? Because there aren't a lot of Latina, Latino physicians out there in the world.
Yeah, definitely. There is only 6% of us Latino physicians in the country, which is insane because we have a growing Hispanic population. Mm-hmm. But I often had so many doubts growing up. I had counselors who told me it would be impossible, especially because of my background and where I came from. And I never really saw a Latino or Latina physician up until I got to college and I participated in a medical pipeline program for underrepresented minorities. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time that I ever met another medical student that looked like me and that had a very similar upbringing that I did. And Since then, I kept in contact with her and she was able to help guide me through the process. But I constantly had these doubts, and it's very common, like you said, amongst us, experiencing this imposter syndrome as well.
Mm-hmm. What gave you before that program, what gave you the encouragement or the motivation to continue down this path?
I think my grandmother's legacy is what kind of inspired me to keep on going. I saw that she always cared for others. And I was very fortunate that when I went to the college that I went to, which was Rutgers, I participated in this health professions learning program. And through that, I was able to have like weekly meetings with different speakers. And these speakers were constantly encouraging us and motivating us. But it was a very hard journey. And even till this day, I sometimes struggle a lot with believing in myself because I don't see a lot of people that look like me that are physicians.
Yeah. As you mentioned, 6%, I think, is the latest number for Latinx, if we want to use that term, physicians out in the workforce. And I believe the general population is 13%. So there's a big difference between the makeup of the physician workforce and the general population. I know there's a big push with some Latino physicians out there with National Latino Physician Day. It's October 6th. Is that the date? 5th, 6th?
October 6th, it was, I believe.
Yeah. One of those early days. Trying to promote awareness around that with 6%. It's not enough slogan, which I love. So what was the pathway program you talked about where you had this exposure as an underrepresented student? Is that something that, or we can give students an idea of what's out there? What was that program?
So the program is called SHPEP. I forgot exactly what it stands for.
Yeah, it's the Summer Health Professional Education Program, I believe.
Yes.
I call it SHPEP for fun because everything is an acronym. But yeah, it's SHPEP, run by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, I believe, administered through the AAMC. So it's a great program for students. And that's a program that you found and obviously seems like it was useful for you.
It was so useful. And I was able to build connections with the current medical school that I go to right now. So it was very nice to transition from a pre-med student to currently a medical student now. And it's been fun being able to give back to current students that have done summer programs as well to kind of inspire them and continue that cycle.
Yeah, that's awesome. So as you were going through your pre-med process, what was the hardest thing for you?
I think the hardest thing was definitely the MCAT. I feel like I was always a person that struggled a lot with standardized exams. And studying for the MCAT was very difficult for me. I was able to get through my pre-med years okay, like through college. And then I ended up taking my MCAT the summer after I graduated college. And then my score wasn't there, and I had already applied to medical school without knowing my score. So I had to retake the MCAT again next year in January, and I had to reapply again. But I feel like the MCAT was always my greatest obstacle.
You are not alone with that. It's unfortunate, right? The AAMC is a little bit transparent with the MCAT, showing race or ethnicity and MCAT scores. And Latinx students score a lot lower than white students and Asian students, and Black students score a lot lower as well.
Yeah.
What do you think, all right, I'm putting you on the spot here solve this problem. What do you think is the cause of that? Why is race such a big factor, it seems like, in an MCAT score?
I think that's such a great question that you brought up, because I definitely have a lot of thoughts about that. And I feel like a lot of times, because we are the first people in our families to pursue this career path, we don't have mentors or parents who are able to kind of guide us. And sometimes we might come from educational systems that might not have been the greatest, so we weren't able to be prepped at a young age. And a lot of times too, our parents don't have sufficient funds in order to be able to provide us with tutoring services or even the MCAT programs as well. That's why, like, I'm very fortunate that I've been able to find free MCAT resources out there that have helped me out. But I do know that a lot of us minorities often do struggle with these standardized exams, even with Step 1 as well. I have noticed a very similar pattern.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's interesting. I was watching some video recently of some European country where they were talking, I think it was an American couple with kids talking about moving to this country. And they're like, we don't have to look at school districts. Like, what's the best school district for our kid? Because every single school gets the same amount of funding no matter what. And I'm like, oh, that would kind of be nice in our world, right? Everything is tied to home valuations, and there's just such a history in this country of issues around that with redlining and other things where depending on where you go to school, like that's a huge factor in your upbringing, in your educational kind of foundation as you move through. It sucks.
Exactly. It's a lot. And I feel like, again, it's something very common amongst us. And it's been a struggle. And sometimes I wish like I had all these other opportunities to be able to, like, let's say, afford private tutors to help increase my, you know, score. But I feel like that kind of determines your resilience. And it really shows that if you really want something and you're able to get it, then, you know, it's meant for you.
Yeah. So obviously, it's not just race. Socioeconomic status is really the core of everything with resources and stuff. What was it for you that allowed you to kind of step back and go, oh, shoot, like I applied, that's a lot of money. I took the MCAT, that's a lot of money. I didn't do well. What gave you the encouragement to go through that process again?
Yeah, so I actually didn't have to pay because I applied to the fee assistance program. And that's something that I share a lot with the people that I'm mentoring, that this program does exist and it allows you to apply to 20 medical schools for free. It allows you to be able to register for the MCAT at a discounted rate. So I'm very fortunate for that. And so when I did, you know, take the MCAT, I saw that I had to reapply again. I was very upset, but, and I remember for like 2 weeks, I was in my bed. I was so sad. I was like, I don't want to have to study for this again. Yeah. But I'm very grateful that I had people in my life, like even including a person that comes here to my medical school. She was always pushing me. She's like, okay, this happened. It's fine. Like we had to move up from here. Mm-hmm. And that's what gave me that motivation.
Yeah. Were you public about that? And I know you have an Instagram kind of following and presence. Were you public about that struggle, or some would say failure? Were you public about that and said, hey, here's who I am, here's where I'm at. And people supported you if they wanted to support you?
Yeah. I think at that time I wasn't as public. Not that I was afraid or ashamed, but I didn't really, I guess I wasn't moved to start a whole account on my journey until I got into medical school. And then I had a little bit of free time and I was like, you know what, I should start a TikTok channel to try to guide other minority students or other people who might come from lower socioeconomic households to guide them how to move along this process. But once I did start my TikTok account, then that's when I started sharing more about my experience of having to retake the MCAT.
Yeah. When you did retake the MCAT, what did you do differently to get the score that you needed to ultimately get into school?
Yeah, so when I took my first MCAT, my sciences were fine. It was just the car section. And that's something that, again, I feel like a lot of us who, where English is not our first language, struggle with that section the most. So I had to actually try to do a completely different strategy. And I'm very grateful for you, actually, because I used your car's podcast with Jack Weston.
Nice.
And I remember literally like having you, hearing you through my headphones, and I printed, no, I had it on my iPad, the PDF files, going through it line by line. Like that was super helpful for me. And I did more practice problems this time for the car section. And that's something that I tried to always leave in the back of my mind. But then I was like, no, if I want to get a good score, I have to focus on this. So that's how I was able to improve my car section.
Yeah. When you were looking at your next application cycle, sometimes it's not just the MCAT, it's potentially other things in your application. How did you look at your application strategically to go, okay, I'm applying again, here's what I need to change, here's what I need to work on, here's where I need to grow? Did you do some of that evaluation as well?
Yeah, again, I'm very fortunate the medical school that I'm at I was able to meet with someone and from admissions, and we literally went through my entire application together. And I had already had experience as an EMT and as a CNA. So I had the clinical experiences that were needed in order to be able to tell my story. And then in terms of my GPA as well, he told me that that was okay, that I didn't have to take do a master's program. So ultimately, it was just about improving my MCAT score.
Yeah. So when you go through that process, you improve your MCAT score, you resubmit your application, you go through that process of hope and fear and anxiety all over again. What was it like to get that first interview invite?
Oh my goodness. It was such a relief. I was like, wow, like, you know, I was actually able to do this. Like, I remember a few months ago, I was very upset about having to do restudy for the MCAT, having to work long hours, because at the time I was working as a medical scribe at the ED and we worked the same exact shifts as the attendings. Wow. So I remember coming out sometimes at 4 a.m, having to sleep for like maybe 4 hours, having to study for the MCAT. And it was just so much. And in Spanish, we have this saying, like, todas las lágrimas valió la pena, which basically means like all those tears, all of that blood, sweat, and tears were all worth something. And I feel like since I got to the point of getting an interview, it was only ultimately up to me to just show them, you know, my passion through Zoom, basically.
Through Zoom. Yeah. How did you feel the interview went? How did you prepare for it?
I think it went very well. I also had your book that I read through, and I tried to make sure I knew how to tell my story. And I also prepped with another student that was applying around the same time that I was applying through. So we were always on FaceTime, kind of going back and forth on how to best prep for this. But the interview went very well. I noticed that most interviews are very conversational. Mm-hmm. Back then when I was a pre-med student applying, I was very scared about how am I going to do well on this interview. And I thought it was going to be a very difficult process. But ultimately, if you're able to, you know, have a regular conversation, I'm pretty sure you'll do well.
Just have a conversation. Yeah, I did a mock interview. I don't do much one-on-one mock interviews anymore, just running the company and business and all the podcasts and stuff. But I did one yesterday, and the student just didn't have a normal conversation. It was all sales pitch stuff. And I'm like, no, we have to get to a normal conversation. Yeah. How many interviews did you ultimately get at the end of the day?
I think I got maybe about 5 or 6 interviews.
Okay. Yeah. And obviously at least one acceptance. What was it like to get that first acceptance?
Yeah. So my first acceptance was through email. So okay. It was when I opened it, I was like, trembling, like, oh my God, like I got into medical school. But I think my most special one was when I received the phone call from my school. And the dean of admissions told me all the wonderful things about my application and how it was very impressive that despite, you know, the obstacles that I had faced in life, that I was here. So I think that was very special to me. And that meant more to me. So that's when I told my whole family. It was a huge celebration. The first doctor in family.
That's fantastic. For the student listening to this who is on their path to becoming the first doctor in their family, what do you think is the biggest thing that they have to keep in mind as they continue to go through this process?
I think it's very important to remember your why. And although it might be very difficult being the first person in your family, being the trailblazer for the people of the town that you're from, your story is very impactful and it's all going to be worth it in the end. And, again, you're building a greater legacy for yourself, for your future family. And those are very important things to keep in mind. And to also remember that although you might not come from an ideal upbringing, that all of those experiences are what's going to make you a better physician.
Yeah. As you started medical school, how much do you think when you compare yourself to other students, you coming from first generation family, mm-hmm. coming from a minority background, how much do you think that played into your ability to transition into medical school?
I think at first I still have struggled with imposter syndrome, but at first it was much worse.
Yeah.
And having classmates that shared a very similar upbringing as myself helped me get through this. and having faculty members, physicians that also looked like me helped a lot. And for me, that was very important when deciding where I wanted to go to medical school. I knew that I wanted to be at a place where I was going to be supported. And I wanted to be also somewhere where there's this club called the Latino Medical Student Association, which is LMSA. Mm-hmm. And because of this organization, I wanted to go to somewhere again that I can be able to like make those connections and establish that at a school. So I've been involved in that throughout medical school as well.
Yeah. How do you think that helps you as a medical student?
Being involved in the LMSA club.
Yeah.
It's helped me a lot, honestly. The first 2 years I was involved in my medical school's chapter, and now I transitioned into the Northeast mentorship chair. So having this role and connecting with others has been very inspiring. And again, it's helped me a lot with keeping myself grounded and reminding myself that I belong here and that we're all part of a bigger mission to try to improve health disparities within our communities. And that was the first time, again, that I was able to see so many people like attending the conferences through LMSA was where I saw people that looked like me.
Yeah. So as you went through first and second year of medical school, now as a third year medical student, what was the hardest part about that transition and where potentially someone coming kind of following in your footsteps where they may go, oh, wait, I know Tabitha said, be careful about this. And they can catch themselves a little bit earlier maybe.
Yeah. So I think the hardest transition was how much information you have to learn in a shorter period of time. So whatever you learned in one semester of college, they taught you in basically 2 weeks in medical school. And depending where you go, depends how many exams you have as frequently. So if you can try your best to incorporate, for example, step one material so that once it comes time to study for step one, you're not struggling on how to answer board style questions. My medical school, for example, gives us NBME style board exams after most units. So having that practice helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. Step one was still a very big hurdle to get through as well. But in general, I know I didn't personally use my breaks to study for step one or using things, but now we guide the next year's class and we tell them, if you have a winter break, try to at least get through like sketchy form or yeah. Try to study if you can. Don't leave it for last minute.
Yeah, don't leave it for last minute. Stay on top of things, please. Be intentional yeah. With your time. Exactly. What was the transition like for you to your clinical years?
I love it so much. I feel like I'm so much more happier because I'm actually able to interact with patients.
So different.
Yeah. And you truly see the difference that you make. And that's another thing that has helped me overcome my imposter syndrome, because again, sometimes I think about my upbringing and I'm like, this can sometimes be an obstacle, but in reality, you'll see, depending where you go to school at, I knew that, again, I wanted to be somewhere where I can serve the underserved population because it's a very similar community to the one that I grew up in. And we always have Spanish-speaking patients, and just being able to interpret for them and gain their trust and show them that, you know, we care about them truly has been such a great game changer for me.
Yeah, that's huge. What do you think is the, as we wrap up here, a couple more questions for just the pre-med path in general and getting into medical school? How do we make it more equitable, right? That's kind of the mission that I'm on with yeah. everything that I do with free resources or low-cost books and yeah. stuff like that. How do we make it so we can match the general population of 13% for Latinx physicians?
Yeah, I think it's very important to try to spread the word on the different programs that are offered for us. And that's something that I've been trying to do with my account, showing that there's programs like SHPP, there's programs, even if you go on Google, like minority or underrepresented minority programs for pre-med students that are free, that will pay for you to stay there. And sometimes these programs even offer you free MCAT programs. I know personally, I did a program called NERA, NERA, here at Rutgers, and they were able to give me free MCAT books. So trying to again, spread these resources and sharing it to students will help us a lot with increasing the number of Hispanic Latinx physicians here in this country.
Yeah. For the student listening to this, who's a first generation student, who may be struggling having these conversations with their parents. I think that's a big struggle. Maybe you can talk about your own experience potentially of helping parents understand what this process looks like and helping them understand. Maybe I've had this conversation with a lot of students, like, I'm going to have to work a little bit less. I'm going to have to provide a little bit less financially for my family because I need to focus on being a student so I can get into med school and change our financial future. How do you recommend having those conversations?
Oh my goodness. I completely understand where they're coming from. And it's like, it took literally years for my parents to understand the process of medical school because they think that since you graduate college, like, you're going to become a doctor. And it's like, no, we still have to go through medical school. We still have to apply to medical school. And kind of like you were saying before, sometimes, especially if you're like the eldest child or you're the person who's kind of responsible for more things, it's a very hard, drastic change for them because they're used to certain expectations. But, you know, having to explain to them that sometimes it's okay to take a gap year because that's a other thing as well that they don't understand. They ask, but why are you taking a gap year? Go straight into medical school, or like, why are you studying so much for this MCAT? Or why are you upset at us if we're having parties and making loud noises, especially for us who live with our parents? It's always a back and forth kind of argument. But I think at the end of the day, you have to sit them down and tell them, like, listen, I'm here to, you know, I'm studying this because I want to become a doctor one day, and this is going to benefit me, but it's also going to benefit you as well. And another thing too is when you're a residency, we're not going to be making a whole ton of money either, but after a few years, you know, we'll be able to build financial stability. And again, like, we immigrated to this country for a specific purpose, and I want to make sure that I fulfill that purpose and that mission.
Yeah, that's huge. As we really wrap up here, what final words of wisdom do you have for the student listening to this who is a first-generation student, first one who will be a physician in their family to help them keep going and stay motivated and potentially find a mentor out there for them?
Yeah, so I always recommend the organizations, LMSA and SNMA as well, which are very geared towards increasing and supporting minority students. And that's an easy way to find a mentor. And I think having a mentor is very, very important because they are the people that will be reading your application essays. They will be helping you prepare for your interviews. But now with Zoom, it's very easy to be able to attend all of these things online. And again, just keeping yourself grounded, reminding yourself that although there might not be as many people that look like you in the workforce that are physicians, just remind yourself that you're making such a huge difference for yourself, for your community, and all of this will definitely be worth it in the end.
All right, so there you have it. Again, Tabitha sharing her story of her journey to medical school. I hope that was inspiring for you. I hope maybe you felt a little bit of yourself. You saw a little bit of yourself in Tabitha's story. That's our goal here. We're always looking for amazing guests here on the Pre-Med Years. If you would like to apply, go to medicalschoolhq.net/apply today. I hope you have a great week. Don't forget to check out to blueprintmcat.com. And if you're looking for some one-on-one help, go over to medicalschoolhq.net/advising. We have a small, amazing team of advisors, mostly former directors of admissions and senior admissions officers over at medicalschoolhq.net who help students with essays, interview prep, and more. Use the promo code PMY to save some money. medicalschoolhq.net. Have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.